listening to Art Speak Radio, a 60-minute live program about the thriving visual and literary arts community in Kansas City. I'm Blair Schulman with Maria Vasquez-Boyd on controls. Hello, Maria.
Hello, darling.
Together, we'll bring you information about what's happening in the arts community, events you should know about, and interviews with local artists, writers, and makers. In Kansas City, the true art lover knows that good work is found everywhere, and two examples of who provide that experience are here in our studio. Melanie Mitchell is the current resident and director of Subterranean Gallery, and her web address is www.subterraneangallery.com, and they're located in Midtown Kansas City. Also joining us are Crystal Ann Brown and Bobby Hauser, founders of the Hound's Den Gallery in Kansas City, Kansas, and their website is thehoundsden.com. Guys, welcome to Art Speak Radio.
Thanks.
Hey, so Melanie, Subterranean Gallery, or Sub Gallery as it's more affectionately known, is in its fourth year of operation. So tell us about Sub and its programming history.
Well, Sub was originally started by Ayla Rexroth, who is another graduate from the Kansas City Art Institute, and she started it in 2010. And so it was kind of her thesis project was starting Subterranean, and so her programming was really, really involved with getting artists to show a lot more installation-based work in the space, and she would always modify the space for those artists. And I came on to start working with her during the Hot Tub Dialogues.
Right. Tell us about that, because that was really quite a project.
Yeah, that was quite interesting. Definitely the most interesting internship I had through college. Ayla had gotten a hot tub from a friend and installed it in her living room. And this became the site for a lecture series. So we basically transformed this basement apartment into a kind of jungle underground themed hot tub lecture series space, and had several artists and people within the arts community come in and give lectures.
Right.
And there was tons of food. And
you actually, and they made the people sit in the hot tub while they gave it. So you had to give these, you had to have these art dialogues while you're in your bathing suits or, or less, because I went to a couple of those. Well, that's kind of hard to top. So once you took over, tell us about the outreach, and also you're working on something called Informality Blog. I want to hear about that too. But tell us about the outreach and what's going on at Sub Gallery since you've taken over.
Well, when I took over the space, I originally didn't know if I was going to be able to keep the name of the space as Subterranean.
Right.
So at the time, I was working for my department at KCAI, running their blog and starting that.
Right.
And my focus was mostly on writing and on trying to create really accessible shows with that internship. And so I was starting to form my own curatorial mission and Informality at that time. And then when I took over Sub, Ayla was like, we want you to keep the name. Clayton and Ayla wanted me to keep the sign and what was already there.
To show the continuity of the space, which is really a good idea because people start to wonder what happened.
Yeah. So it was great because right after that happened, there is a graphic designer who was going to the Art Institute, Wendy Vong, and she approached me and said, hey, I have to do a rebranding project for school.
Right.
So she helped me kind of not only come up with a different kind of mission, but rebrand the gallery to be my own.
Right.
And that felt really awesome to have a new space. It didn't feel like I was living in my old boss's house anymore.
Right.
Which was weird at first.
Right, but you maintain the fundamentals of the space. So what, aside from really crazy one-off ideas like hot tub dialogues, what have you presented to Sub Gallery so far?
Well, so far, the first exhibition was Rachel Greger, and she is a figurative painter and a friend of mine who went to the Art Institute. And she approached me as soon as I moved in, actually, and said, I want a show at Sub. And one of my main missions with starting curatorial practice was to give people like Rachel shows.
Right.
Because I don't really see a lot of traditional figurative female painters.
I completely agree with you because I actually reviewed that show for Cupcakes and Regalia. And it was nice to, there aren't a lot of traditional, quote-unquote, painters in Kansas City that I can think of off the top of my head. So it was really nice to see something so almost so straightforward in that space. What else is, so you also talk, you also have lecture series and other events going on in there. Tell us about that.
So my kind of curatorial goal is I see curation as a way to be an educator, because I'm also a teacher. So I don't see curatorial practice as just this kind of esoteric thing where you arrange objects on a wall and people don't have to get it. I'm really interested in the artist's ideas and what types of things they are thinking about in their studios. So the artists that I worked with in the spring, Ryan Schrum, he was really interested in kind of pushing that forward and creating programs. So I would find out what his studio questions were, find out the things that he was really interested in, and then we would build educational programs for the public around those. Right. And my favorite was actually an art brunch we did was all about exploring gender and identity in the home. And that was a great discussion.
Right. So, Crystal and Bobby, the Hound's Den, it invites visitors into your house, and you occupy the space completely unchanged to accommodate any given installation. And I, looking at your website, you almost consider your space an extension of the artist's workspace. So tell our listeners about that and what the Hound's Den is.
Well, the Hound's Den... So the Hound's Den is a non-traditional experimental space that was... It sort of was born out of this idea that there wasn't a whole lot of places that we could exhibit that were family-friendly and...
Yeah, see, you really are bringing people into your home, and it's completely unchanged, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me just read a little bit of our mission statement. I think that'll kind of help me focus here a little bit.
Of course.
So it's an experimental art venue that seeks to redefine the traditional way that we view and discuss art. The site offers the viewers the opportunity to experience art outside of the institution, where most work is created in a studio space, such as a basement, an attic, or a spare bedroom.
Right.
And it's important that we provide an alternative space that extends that mode of thinking.
Right.
And I also like to include that as a family of artists, that it remains important that we are an inclusive as event space and not exclusive. Throughout history, I think that being a successful artist and a committed parent were mutually exclusive endeavors, and our venue aims to provide a space that does not perpetuate that notion.
Sure.
And we believe that the world can benefit by accommodating all family types as well as single artists. And fully integrating a more holistic and sustainable art venue.
Sure. Well, Crystal or Bobby, I want to ask, how does being parents affect what is decided that that you put in this space?
It actually affects a lot of things. Elliot's three.
We should mention that you have a three-year-old son.
Three.
So it's really the house is set up. It's really a home with a little child in the house, and really you don't accommodate the visitor for that. It's like kind of take it as it is.
Yeah, that's definitely how it is. I like to think of our space, the difference between a traditional gallery space and our space is that our walls are constantly interrupted by whether it's our windows, writing on the wall. Elliot writes on the wall a lot, so oftentimes we have to sort of make an agreement with the artists that are exhibiting in the space, you know, that there's a child here and that there will be these interruptions that happen and take place and that the work needs to be accommodating.
So accidents will happen. And have they?
No, they haven't.
Well, so Elliot's
behaving.
We've
been lucky.
Yeah, he's been behaving.
We've been really lucky, but I think that takes away some preciousness that exists in the gallery space. So something that is really interesting and important to me is that generally when we're viewing art in an austere space, we have a different kind of dialogue and a different kind of experience with it, that there is a sort of like preciousness that is involved. And when it's in our house, I feel like the artists that have exhibited so far have been able to kind of let go of some of those standards, and they are more able to really experiment and really let go of that preciousness.
I completely agree. And sub-gallery also, the same goes. There's an intimacy that both sub-gallery and Hound's Den creates, like an entree into a personal space. So, Melanie, let me ask you, does it create a different sort of conversation, not only about the work, but with also the people who come to visit these spaces?
Well, I think the people that come to visit are, regardless of who it is in particular, I think they're having a different type of interaction because
right.
it's a home. And homes themselves are curated in a completely different way than a gallery space would be. And regardless of the fact that, unlike your space, I remove pretty much everything and try to make it look as minimal as possible,
right.
there are still things that I choose to put on shelves, things that are within my kitchen.
Right.
And that creates this feeling of being in a home and this feeling of that salon-type discussion.
Sure, but you still manage to accommodate the fact, or you still acknowledge the fact that this is a living environment, whereas at the Hound's Den, there I see the dishes are on the shelves and things are obvious that you're walking into somebody's house.
Yeah, we don't remove anything for the artists unless they've specifically requested it. So generally, I don't clean off my bookshelves, for example. There's always something on the bookshelf. And our dishes are generally always done, but there's always something in the kitchen
sure.
that's out of place. And the beds are sometimes made, but it really depends on how the week is going for us, too.
Right.
And so you really are entering a home space.
Yeah, that is true. And have people mistaken things in your home for part of the exhibition? Has that happened?
Well, I don't think people have mistaken things in our home for the exhibition, but they've often asked, where is the art? Because it's integrated so well into our living space
exactly.
that sometimes it can be difficult to decide.
And the house is not, and I've visited Houndsden several times, and it's not, you don't walk in, I think at Subgallery, you're walking into a space and you kind of know that is part of the exhibition, that is not part of the exhibition. But when you go into Hound's Den, I'm literally just coming to visit you. It's like an open house. I'm just coming to check it out. And by the way, you better take this piece of paper because this will tell you specifically what is the work and what's not.
Yeah, we've mapped everything out for the guests that arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way you can see the distinction or you can it's a map, so you kind of have to guess
sure.
a little bit. There's a little bit of guessing involved, and I think that makes it really interesting because it's a little bit more like an adventure.
It does. Tell us about some of the exhibitions that you've had at the Hound's Den.
So our first exhibition, we're actually a very new gallery. So October of last year, October of 2013.
So how many exhibitions have you held so far?
We've held three exhibitions, but we've held a Backyard Film Festival and a Spectra screening.
Okay. What's a Spectra screening?
Well, Bobby and I are part of a group called Spectra, and it's a nomadic platform for film and video, and I was a venue, or the Houndsden was a venue
right.
for a screening there. But some of the exhibitions that took place, Justin Beechler is a local artist, and
he's been on the show before.
Yeah, and he had some really great work in there. His Reconstruction Obliteration was the title for his work, and he took a lot of things, nostalgic things from his childhood. And from what I understand, some of the pieces were also things that were given to him that were reminiscent of his childhood and installed them in our house and arranged them by blocking out certain areas with paint or just reconfiguring them. And a lot of the work was about memory and that remembering.
And it was really like a, like a treasure hunt. Like you kind of
mm-hmm.
had, he hid a lot
yeah,
of things because it was part of his work about being a a bad teenager and
yeah.
doing certain things that we won't talk
yeah.
about on air,
so
but you had to figure it out.
Yeah, we had some work that was in the vents of the house,
right.
and that was really interesting because it's a little awkward to have people in your house, like taking the vent cover off and it's dusty and dirty and you have to pull it out and it's just
and that's part of the experience.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to ask some more questions, but first we're going to do a little underwriting. We'll be right back.
Support for KKFI provided by the KC Fringe Festival, running from July 17th to July 27th at multiple venues around KC. Theater, comedy, fashion, visual arts, burlesque, spoken word, dance, music, film, and much, much more. KC Fringe Festival is filled with the most diverse collection of entertainers and styles from around the globe and right here in KC. KCFringe.org for more details and information. And remember,
what happens at the Fringe Fest stays at the Fringe Fest. Two menial security guards are embroiled in an unexpected family fiasco.
Suppose somebody who's supposed to be near and dear to you was accused of doing some kind of terrible crime and was trying to use you as an alibi.
Lobby Hero by Kenneth Lonergan, next time on L.A. Theater Works.
Wednesday evening from 7 to 9.
And we're back. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Blair Shulman, and we are talking with Melanie Mitchell of Subgallery, and also Crystal Ann Brown and Bobby Hauser of the Hound's Den in Kansas City, Kansas. So, Melanie, I wanted to also ask, I was reading the mission statement, which is part of it was saying that you're exporting work and dialogue and importing collectors. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, too.
Okay.
That seems to be a big... I know we have a lot of local people who know one another, and everybody comes out to support each other, which is a really great thing in the Kansas City art community. But one of the things that we're trying to embark upon is widen that net to bring in more people into Kansas City, and everybody's working very hard at that. So what's Sub part?
Well, I guess that is where Sub and informality kind of overlap, where mm-hmm. the Venn diagram of doing two things makes them work together. The whole goal for me is seeing that the artists that I work with really utilize the internet and really utilize the programming to help bring more of the community together
right.
and expand the audiences they have for them. Because I think, especially in an alternative space, the only thing that you can really offer an artist if you can't sell their work is by saying, you know, well, I can at least offer you social agency, so I can help give you social currency
right.
by giving you more exposure, giving you to my network, helping you network further, helping you figure out more people to talk to and expand with. And my whole approach with informality is to export the ideas of Kansas City and
mm-hmm.
hopefully import collectors, because we have a lot of things going on, but
yeah.
it usually evaporates at an opening.
What do you mean by evaporates at an opening? I'd like you to elaborate on that.
So a lot of the discussion that I have found that exists here in Kansas City is between artists at openings, especially at the openings in the West Bottoms and the openings that happen at like Paragraph and La Esquina, the
mm-hmm.
Charlotte Street spaces. That's where artists really will give their opinions and say
mm-hmm.
things that are really poignant and great, but then won't write them down.
Right.
And so this arts criticism that's happening and that's really active right then and there, sometimes the artists never hear it. And so
right.
that's not beneficial to the artists in our community, because then they can't move their work forward and learn from that criticism.
Sure.
And I think that it's great to find a way to try and nebulize the criticism into one place
mm-hmm.
and form alternative types of programs to get that to move forward.
Well, and we were talking earlier about having a digital presence and
mm-hmm.
how important that is, because I think part of what is driving people to spaces like this is the knowledge that they can access information and figure out that this place, even that Hound's Den or Subgallery or other spaces even exist, and having a digital presence with one's artwork is really important. So what at Subgallery drives the digital presence and drives these ideas for exhibitions there?
Well, for a while it was just the fact that I have informality and I wanted those two things to work together and really kind of expand Subterranean's WordPress. But the more I started doing research into my own artistic practice and where I wanted that to go, I became really, really interested in net artists and a particular gallery in Brooklyn called Transfer Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were doing with one particular exhibition is they actually recreated their entire space in Second Life. So even if
elaborate on that.
Second Life is a digital space where you can recreate using prims anything in real life using prims and textures. So it basically is a 3D modeling like The Sims
right.
of real life, but it's online, so people can go and interact and do all kinds of weird things. So in Second Life, Transfer Gallery created their space and allowed for a digital artist to show this huge 3D sculpture.
Right.
And for me, that was a huge breakthrough to see that in a way that that artist may have never been able to show their sculpture within the context of a gallery that large, but they opened up an opportunity for them to show that digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been working with my boyfriend, who's a 3D artist.
Okay.
And so he has completely 3D rendered Subterranean Gallery. And we're really interested in seeing how artists can utilize both our tech equipment that we have. We've got tons of monitors sitting around that all end up getting packed into our bedroom during
sure.
openings, and a projector, and seeing how utilizing the Second Life space and utilizing this 3D technology and the internet, we could create an exhibition that doesn't necessarily just get viewers from Kansas City, but gets viewers from outside of Kansas City.
Right.
And expand that network.
Right. And Crystal or Bobby, what kind of experimentation is Houndsden embarking on? I mean, this is a really ripe opportunity for you guys, especially in this time and place in Kansas City right now. I think it's a really good time for Kansas City artists to really mess around and try new ideas and succeed or fail. It doesn't matter. Just have a good time. What are you seeing when you go out? Because you go out a lot. I see you guys out a lot. And what are you seeing, and what kind of experimentation do you want to bring back to Houndsden?
Well, I think I kind of mentioned it just for a second before that I like to take the limits off of. So let me backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
We talked a little bit before the show that I actually don't like to consider the Houndsden a gallery because it's too formal for me. So I like to think of the Houndsden as an exhibition space and take some of that formality away. So that allows the artist to experiment without some of the restraints that a gallery might put on an artist. So let's take, for example, in our mission statement, I talk about how we're sort of an extension of a studio space that you might have in your home, in your attic or basement. And so we provide a space for you to actually show that work as an opening,
right.
And have people there all together experiencing it and talking about it. And I really enjoyed that you were mentioning
Melanie.
I'm sorry, we were mentioning. Now I sort of lost track
well,
of what
it,
I was
it's
saying,
a, it's okay.
But
talking about experimentation and bringing the presence to casting a wider net in
yeah.
the city, and I think that's probably one of the most important things.
Just to kind of piggyback off maybe what Crystal was saying is, you know. As a domestic space, we're getting ready to move in a month. So hopefully we're going to be able to draw in some of like the neighborhood, you know, people in the neighborhood, neighbors.
Sure.
Because a lot of times it's kind of the same kind of crowd that comes to the openings.
And that I think, and even though in Kansas City you see a lot of the same faces, it's like that all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go out and you're going to see the people in the area, and that's just what they do. And so what you're hoping to do, have you, I wanted, and I also wanted to ask you, how do your neighbors respond to this? I mean, this is, you're in a suburban neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so what do they think of, like, all these crazy art people coming up your driveway?
I think exactly that. I think they think we're crazy. We've invited them a couple times, and then, you know, something.
Do they come?
No.
See, that's too bad, because, I mean, I've been to several events at Houndsden, and there's nothing untoward or crazy going on there. I mean, it's just like having an open house, and,
yeah.
and I think that's part of the thing that I believe spaces like Sub and Houndsden need to do is kind of break down those walls, and a lot of galleries also try to do that. I think people get a little uptight or nervous about, I don't know what to talk about in there, or I don't know how to respond or react.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think when you're in a space like Houndsden, do you think it kind of takes the pressure off for the visitor?
Yeah, I think that 100%. I think it's very much like a, you know, we're opening our house, we're having a get-together, and we're having some snacks and hanging out and talking, and generally there's kids running around, which is really nice, because although that happens in a gallery, there's a lot of don't touch this, don't touch that, where a lot of the work has been, we're allowing those children to kind of really experience that, and maybe they can touch a few things, and,
sure.
You know.
I mean, the last time you had a show, you had a big clay, table, and all the kids were playing on it. What was that thing? I thought it was actually part of the show, and you said no, it wasn't. See,
yeah.
So that's
was part of the show.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, that was. Part
but
of the
see,
show.
It's part of that confusion, which it's a nice confusion,
mm-hmm.
that allows people to say, well, is it or isn't it? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and one question that I like to pose to people sometimes too is that, you know, how does the work function after it's bought off of the gallery wall and put into your house? Like, where does that live, and how do you respond to that, and how are you showing that work? And I think that we offer an environment that's very similar to that, but we open it to the public, and I think that is a great opportunity for people to start thinking a little mm-hmm. bit more critically about things.
And Melanie, do you think that people, when they're in an intimate space like that, have a different type of conversation when
absolutely.
They're in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
how,
I think,
how are people behaving in there?
Well,
aside from the free wine.
Well, it all kind of started with the conversations I was noticing with the hot tub dialogues, and that's kind of what those conversations that were happening then, and that happened at every consecutive opening I helped Ayla with until she left.
Right.
Were the reason that I wanted to keep sub. It was because the conversations that were happening were so much better.
Mm-hmm.
They were so much richer. Because when you have low ceilings and you're in a basement and you are sometimes, you know, in a proximity of a hallway with piping above you, and you can't just talk about what's going on or what the weather is. The art is less than 6 inches from your face. You
right.
have to talk about it. And so that proximity, I think, really helps, along with the fact that it is a domestic space. And I have dishes, too, hanging
sure.
out. And sometimes people think the painting in my bathroom is part of the show. And a lot of times there are confusing times where people are like, oh, can I go in your bedroom? No. Like, what parts, where is the public versus private in the space is really kind of a line that I think helps influence that conversation.
Right.
Because people are willing to say things they otherwise wouldn't have said in a private, in a public space, because they're in your home.
Right.
So that that contextual change is really important.
Sure. And contrarily, at Houndsden, you are welcome to go into your bedroom and
mm-hmm.
into your son's room, and his toys are there, and you kind of wind up just like playing with his toys a little bit, and and you're looking at the work, and and when you walk into the space, you're given a map, and you do have to kind of search around and figure it out, because you do have your own collection in there as well. So it does. Do you kind of stop people from, you shouldn't go into that space or not? How does that work?
Not
at
all. I actually encourage people to go in all of the rooms, and there really isn't a space in our house that is off limits when we have these kinds of openings.
Sure.
So that's kind of a complication that, or I guess we're just kind of implicated in that as a family.
Sure.
It's an agreement that we don't really have mm-hmm. private things when we have these openings.
Sure. Well, I mean, people don't open closet doors. I mean, at least
no.
I haven't. But we do.
No.
We did open vents.
Yeah, but you're prompted to.
I
think that's the difference.
Exactly. So what is the takeaway that your visitors are getting? I mean, what have people said to you either when they're leaving for the evening or they visited you another time? What has been the response and the reaction to being allowed to touch everything? Because, as you were all saying earlier, in a more austere traditional gallery where people are, you know, there's a different type of seriousness. I mean, not to say that you're not serious, but it's a lot more relaxed. But in your environment, it is, you are allowed to touch this and touch this. So what are people saying about that when they leave?
I don't think I've had a whole lot of comments when people are leaving, but one thing that I've noticed is that hesitance when they enter the home, and that they're a little bit confused about where the work is
mm-hmm.
and how they should present themselves or interact with the work. And so a lot of times I will reassure a visitor that, yeah, it's okay for you to go into the bathroom, or maybe you should check out what's
mm-hmm.
in this room. You can open up the vent and see what's
right.
inside of there. That's okay. But, mostly just hesitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about at Subgallery? How are people responding? Even though it because it is still a domestic space,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say there's a more... It's just a very different kind of layout, and it doesn't have the same... We don't see your bedroom, and we don't see your... We don't see as much of the intimacy as the Hound's Den. So what kind of takeaway are people having at Subgallery?
I find that a really interesting question, because most of the work that I was making as a visual artist was about showing people my bedroom and drawing that really mm-hmm. private space. But I think it comes down to, depending on the exhibition, what is the most appropriate space to be shown and to be utilized. Mm-hmm. Like for Ryan's show, we completely blocked off an entire section. But for Rachel's show, she wanted Ryan Shrum.
Okay.
He wanted an entire section blocked off and to utilize curtains.
Right.
And then Rachel wanted as much open space, as much wall space as possible to let her work breathe. And so it's really artist-specific. But then I also think I am not an organized enough person to let people just roam through my whole house.
Right. I know. You do. It's a gallery. I mean, even Ayla also, you had doors were shut and closed,
yeah.
and you just... You just respected that and you didn't do it. We're going to take a little musical break and then we'll be right back. So stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, and I hope you enjoyed a little bit of Roxy music, as I do. My guests this evening are Melanie Mitchell, the resident and director of Subgallery, and their web address is subterraneangallery.com. Also in the studio is Crystal Ann Brown and Bobby Hauser. They're the founder of the Hound's Den Gallery in Kansas City, Kansas, and their website is thehoundsden.com. So before the break, I was thinking about this, and I wanted to ask, what, even though you do invite the public and you do invite everybody to come in and explore and touch and everything's okay, what are the kind of what are the limitations in an intimate space like the Hound's Den? Tell us what that means.
So some of the limitations are, and these are things that I go over with artists who propose to have work in our space, is that you don't bring anything that's too precious, because nothing is off limits for Elliot. So there's an amount of...
And for our listeners, Elliot is their three-year-old son who's a nice kid and very rambunctious and has full run of the place.
That's very true. And so usually we can make those kinds of accommodations, but that means that we have to limit ourselves to the artist's work, what kind of work can be put in the space. Mm-hmm. And we don't insure any of the work, so that's something that the artist exhibiting have to agree to,
right.
because accidents can happen, and it thankfully hasn't happened yet, but
sure.
It's a possibility.
Sure. And what about, same question, Melanie, what happens at Subgallery? I mean, it is a very intimate space, and it does has very low ceilings also. So what kind of limitations are you presented with when you want to try something out?
Well, I'm presented with that as the low ceilings, no natural light anywhere in the gallery.
Right.
And then just the fact that there are weird things that happen, because it is a 100-year-old building in Midtown Kansas City. So sometimes humidity and moisture controls mm-hmm. will cause things to warp. And every single time that I have artists come in, I say, okay, we might not want to hang it on this wall because if someone leans on it, it could break the wall.
Right.
So there, I mean, Ayla built the space by hand, slowly, piece of drywall by piece of drywall. So that has some limitations, but at the same time, it also allows me to know this is exactly how this wall is constructed. So
right.
It allows me to have some control in another aspect.
Right.
But it definitely is a bit limiting with, I can't show drawings, which kind of stinks, because I love drawings.
Sure. And Hamzin, you do show drawings. You mm-hmm. show a lot of drawings.
Yeah, we do. And installations that are incorporated into the architecture that are up high. And that's
right,
yeah.
Right. You both have low ceilings, and mm-hmm. and I know not too long ago there was a lecture at Subgallery that mm-hmm. was really good, and then suddenly the lights went out. But
yep.
I wasn't going to let that stop anybody. I just shouted out, just keep going, and you kept going. And I think in a larger, more traditional gallery, I think it might have been viewed as some kind of tragedy, but I think
that was awesome.
But in Subgallery, it was awesome, and everybody just, let's just do it in the dark, and we did.
The
and
conversation got more intimate because suddenly everyone came together in that we were all experiencing a power outage together in someone's home.
Right. And it is that sense of intimacy that I really enjoy in both of your spaces. There's another intimate gallery space in the Crossroads called Empire, and that was founded by Tiffany Thompson in 2010. It's kind of it invites, and it's really, really intimate. It's only 14 by 6 feet, and she invites one artist, one curator, and one critic into a conversation, and eventually they discuss the work, and it results in an essay and an exhibition at the space. And some of the participants have included, like, Devin Watney and Gary Noland and Alaska Noyes. And most recently, Carrie Real received a curatorial residency for Empire, and she opened her first exhibition there last month. And I want our listeners to know that Empire is located at 1715 Wyandotte off of West 18th Street in the Crossroads. And it is that kind of intimacy that allows for people to start talking together, because when we were at Empire and you were there, Melanie, there were these two guys who heard about the event, and there was only one piece of art in the space because it's 14 by 6 feet and it only holds like four people in there, and otherwise you start sweating it out. And these two guys were like, I don't know. They kind of didn't want to stay, and we encouraged them to stay, and they wound up staying for like a half an hour and just having this whole discussion. And we started talking about all these really bizarre things that I think it's a different level that goes beyond just the gallery chatter. I think people start to relax a lot more. Do you find that people are talking and they're more relaxed, like at Houndsden?
Oh, yeah, totally. I think that there's time for, you know, a really great dialogue, and then you're interrupted by a child running by
Sure. Or
something else happening, and then you kind of realize that this place isn't as intimidating as,
right.
as other situations, and so you just continue on having that dialogue. It's very casual.
Sure. And talk about what kind of experimentation do you want to try out in your new space, because you're moving mm-hmm. pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to be moving at the end of the month, and I think we're going to continue on this path of just letting every exhibition that we've had so far has been very different, and the experimentation has also been very different. So
mm-hmm.
I think we'll just continue inviting artists and see what happens, because I'm very excited every time someone installs work. We're also maybe thinking about doing some lecture series as well,
right.
And we also screen video from time to time.
Right. And, Sub, you have lecture series as well, and that was when they had the blackout. Tell us about that, because that was a really fun. I kind of came in late, but it was just fun to just jump into the conversation anyway. And it's part of the
collaborating with Alt Lecture KC, mm-hmm. Which is curated by Jessica Borowski, who's a resident at Charlotte Street. And that is an alternative lecture series, and we got to be a host that particular week. But our lecture series typically are coming from things Informality is doing, and they're less lectures, more educational programs. Like one that we did this spring was called Crit to Crit.
Right.
And it was all about helping artists transition the dialogue of arts criticism or dialogue of critique into art criticism.
Right. And that's a big thing in Kansas. Or I shouldn't say a big thing in Kansas City, but it's something that people really like to absorb, because Plug Projects, they do their Crit Night. In between exhibitions, they'll invite artists to bring in works in progress, and it's kind of like a reverse studio visit. Instead of going into their studio, they're going into the gallery, and all these strangers come around and they have a critique, which is a very unique experience for them. So everybody has an opportunity to talk about that. So, but Melanie, I also wanted to ask, what does Kansas City require? Because Kansas City is in a very, I don't want to say it's a unique position, but it's in a very good position to try and experiment with new ideas. Does it require some unique solutions for exhibitions and sales? I mean, how does the sub-gallery concern itself with sales at all?
No.
No. What about Houndsden?
We do, but the profit is for the artists, and it's at their own discretion. So if they would like to have work for sale, that's completely up to them, but we don't take a profit.
Sure. Does Kansas City need, do they have the idea of sales and exhibitions? Do you think that's a concern for a lot of galleries in the area? I don't really see people talking so much about sales as they're much as they're talking about having interesting shows and exibitions. How do you see it?
Well, I think that there's different levels of it. I think that artists are making work for other artists, mostly.
Right.
And so we talk about the great shows. We talk about what the concepts are, what the ideas are, and we're very idea-driven. We're not as market-driven here as cities like Chicago or New York, where people are just going to come swoop in and just buy things.
Right.
But I think that Kansas City is a unique place in that it has the potential to really be market-driven.
Right.
And that's kind of more of my main focus with Informality, is trying to tap into different audiences that could and would be interested in buying art but don't feel like they're a part of the conversation that happens. The people that wouldn't ever come to an opening at a domestic gallery space because they don't feel like they belong in the arts community, or they don't feel like they belong going there, or just a gallery space in general. A lot of people I've gotten in this conversation with when I was buying a car. The finance director at the car dealership said, "How do I buy art?
Right.
You know, I make so much money and I don't know how to fill my walls with art. What's an art opening? How do I go?"
Right.
And there's a lot of people asking that question, but not a lot of people addressing how to make that happen. And I think artists, by writing and by kind of expanding their practices and being willing to be transparent, willing to do things like Crit Night, and have these more open and transparent programs for their work, will allow people to develop a relationship of trust with them so that they'll actually want to own this luxury item, this artwork.
Right. And what is your opinion about this, Crystal? What do you think? Do you have an idea about this?
I do. I don't see Kansas City being extremely market-driven, but I guess my shyness towards, like, really thinking about that in terms of the Houndsden is that I don't want to... I think that sometimes when you're thinking constantly about, is someone going to buy my work, it kind of, you're limiting yourself because you're not really thinking about, well, what's at stake in this work and how can this be really a great piece of work, and how can I expand my my practice?
Right.
And so I think thinking about the market isn't really something that I've thought too much about, because it's not something that I want to really tap into.
Right. Well, with that, we're going to take another underwriting break, and we'll be right back.
At UPS, telematics is Big Brother, an onboard monitoring system worthy of the NSA. Hear about it this week on the Heartland Labor Forum, where we will also discuss the latest taxi gimmick, Uber and Lyft. Is it a gypsy cab system or your friend with a car? Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday at 5 a.m.
After the Harvest needs volunteers to help pick corn in Wellsville, Kansas from July 7th to August 5th. The corn will then be distributed to local food pantries and harvesters. If you're interested in helping, call Corrine Page at 816-853-4460. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on KKFI, 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Blair Shulman, and I'm talking with Melanie Mitchell of Subterranean Gallery and Crystal Ann Brown and Bobby Hauser, founders of the Hound's Den Gallery in Kansas City, Kansas. Crystal, before the break, we were talking about things being an extension of practice. Talk about a sustainability for an artist and for a space as well. Tell us about that.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of experience with that. It's more of like a dialogue that I think needs to be considered and thought about amongst these kinds of galleries, because how long can a domestic space last? Is it something that can be sustainable for a long period of time? Is it something that can generate enough funding so that it can provide resources for itself? And these are sort of things that I'm asking myself right now and that I'm really interested in investigating. And I'm kind of wondering, like, what else is out there?
Well, Melanie, what do you have to say about that?
In terms of sustainability
for
the space? Well, I think that the space itself is a great opportunity right now, and it's a great place for me to grow. And it really kind of goes to looking at other cities that have a lot of apartment galleries. They turn over really quickly. They usually don't last more than 3 years. And so when I think about sustainability, I think about it in terms of how could the same types of ideas continue to work in different ways. So I'm constantly going to think, well, what if I was in a different type of space? Like, recently there was a call for things at La Esquina, and so I just started thinking, well, what would an exhibition with my type of curatorial mission look like there? Or what would it end up looking like, you know, 20 years down the road if I ever got a PhD in a museum?
Sure.
So I think that these places are more for experimentation, and sustainable business models are really, really difficult when you can't even become a nonprofit.
Right. I know, and people don't really want to talk about the grotty things about money. I mean, I know an artist does want to make money, but they don't make the work because they want to make money. They want to just make the work because they love to make the work, and they really want to find the right environment to present it, because I think that's how they can employ their vision.
And to that, I think that that's kind of my main driving point behind why artists should also write or do speaking engagements or kind of push their ideas forward and not be afraid to be transparent with their studio practice, because I think that by expanding that, you can, you know, write books, you can do other things within your studio practice with those ideas, just exploring them either macro or micro, doing things that you're still passionate about,
right,
and making money, not necessarily just relying on selling the work.
Sure. Well, and to continue talking about the extension of practice, when we were at Empire, Melanie, a few weeks ago, the work that was there, it looked like a photograph, but it was completely digitized, and somehow we got into this conversation about the post-internet age of art, and Carrie Real like brought that up to me, and I kind of looked at her like she was cuckoo. But post-internet art, I guess, is a very, very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do artists who create work in a virtual realm go about protecting and capturing their first use? That was the conversation that we had, and I guess it's a very legitimate question.
Yeah, I mean, especially because a lot of digital artists are also somewhat hackers, somewhat hacktivists, somewhat very...
A hacktivist?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you know, people who... Most of the people that I know that are digital or net artists read lots of, you know, Kevin Mitnick books and have a lot of fun talking about free media. I mean, I hear about that all the time from my boyfriend, Kevin Heckert, who is a net artist. And so having those types of discussions.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but tell us what a net artist is for our listeners who don't know, like myself.
Okay. So the best way I could describe it is he only makes work for the Internet. So most of his work is all either GIF or JPEGs or videos, and they're only shown either online, or if they're shown offline, he tries to keep them exclusively for that particular exhibition and then shows them all online. So he has, I feel like internet artists and net artists have this different attitude toward their work and exclusivity, which I'm really, really interested in. Mm-hmm. They're not as worried about, someone can't see my work because it's really, the gallery won't want to show me right. If I have my work out on the internet. They're more interested in sharing. They're interested in the concept of free media. They're interested in how can I get my work out there and share as much as possible, as many times as possible. And that is a fascinating concept to me and has forced me to switch my own practice to be completely digital.
Right. And this kind of opens up the conversation about net neutrality and things like that. And I know you just rolled your eyes because you're filled with anger. It's a real thing. And I remember I'm older than you guys. And I remember when the net was something called the Well. And it was, I mean, this is the days even before AOL. It was really a place where people got together and shared ideas. And it sounds, Melanie, like what you're talking about. And also, Crystal, I mean, your artists, too, they kind of exist in this world that they want to share these things, but they also want to be able to protect themselves. And it's a different kind of protection when it's electronic. Do you show any digital work at Houndsden?
Well, we've shot digital video, and that's about as far as it's gone. And some of that digital video has already been shown in other spaces, too. So not really, but we do have a website where we archive the work that's been in the house and in our exhibition space. And I think that eventually that website is in itself a piece of art, too, because mm-hmm. it is a basis for which we can sort of bounce things off of in the future and reference.
I mean, that's a very legitimate idea. But to go back to my original question, Melanie, so how does someone who creates digital work protect themselves from piracy? And talk about the provenance.
Yeah, I sometimes fantasize about becoming a archivist at a museum for only digital work.
Right.
Thinking about, can we find its originating FTP site? And what would happen if, you know, the media that it was created with, like, what if the GIF starts to deteriorate like DVDs do?
Right.
What happens? How do you continuously keep that media up to date and keep it conserved? And also thinking about, well, if it's a stolen digital file, someone claiming that they are the artist.
Right.
And this happens all the time to net artists. They have their work taken, put on Tumblr, links removed.
Ownership's a very big
ownership
deal online.
Ownership completely disappears. But, you know, the metadata that's in the original file that was downloaded says where it originally came from. And so I am becoming fascinated in the idea of, well, how can we find that metadata? How can we find its originating source? Like, is it possible to track the IP it originally came from? And is that the legitimate IP that the gallery needs to know so that they know that they're getting it from the artist and not someone imposing as them or stealing
sure.
their work?
So IP addresses become a form of provenance.
Yeah, I think so.
That's really, that goes way over my head and blows my mind at the same time.
But then you have to have a static IP. That goes into a whole other thing, too.
That's just crazy. But I guess that's the world that we're moving into, and that's the type of experimentation. And I think going into spaces like the Houndsden and Subgallery, even though they offer the traditional environments, it's also a place of experimentation. What do you have coming up at the Houndsden, Crystal?
As of tomorrow, Marnie Kotak, she put a 60-minute screening together. She's a performance artist, and she has some documents from those performances, and she has curated them in a 60-minute video for us, and we'll be screening that tomorrow night.
And so people can go visit your space. And the web address, again, mm-hmm. is the Houndsden. subgallery.com. And Melanie, what do you have going on at Subgallery right now and coming up? And
well, currently we're actually taking the summer off so I can work on my own studio and my writing and Informality. Informality is looking for writers at any point, but we're paying. But right now, because we have a wonderful grant from Arts KC, I'm working on kind of focusing on that until September, but we are currently accepting exhibition proposals for all digital exhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of digital technologies and the Second Life space, so we're hoping to just show digital work for a while and kind of see how we can push my curatorial and also technological boundaries with that.
Sure. Do you think that there's a different kind of user experience when you're in an intimate space like Subgallery or Houndsden, even, where you're showing work that you don't have to stand 50 feet back to go look at a piece of work?
I think that definitely changes the way that a monitor operates in a gallery. And that conversation happened a lot at the last Plug Projects critique of, like, what is the function of monitor in gallery?
Right.
And I think
that was Annie Woodfill. It was her installation that we were talking about.
Yeah, and when you think about a monitor within a home, it has a completely different idea.
It's a laptop. I mean, it's on your lap. You take it to bed with you or wherever.
Or it's a tablet, or it's, you know, the computer screen monitor that still has stickers on it or something like
that. So now you're reversing that perceived intimacy and presenting it to a broader audience.
Mm-hmm.
So that requires, does the type of work have to be reconfigured, or is it a whole new idea? I'm not clarifying it, but what kind of work do you think will come out of this when the environment is different than, say, you're looking at it on your laptop at home or on your smartphone?
I'm interested in how that change happens.
Right.
And potentially making points where people can interact with it on a smartphone or on something that is more intimate, more closed off, and thinking about how that and those ideas can work for someone that's work is inherently digital or references the digital. I mean, some people will make things that don't necessarily have to be on a screen, but mm-hmm. could reference one.
Well, this is really terrific that there are two gallery settings that are both intimate and both invite the public, but yet they're kind of exploring two different realms, and I really enjoyed having all of you here. So Melanie Mitchell is the Subgallery, and for more information about that is subterraneangallery.com. Do you have a web address for Informality Blog?
Yeah, it's informalityblog.com.
Great. And Crystal Ann Brown and Bobby Hauser at the Hound's Den, their web address is thehoundsden.com. I want to thank all of you for being on the show this evening. Maria, what's on store for
next week? We have Sandra Moran, who is a teacher, author, and international woman of intrigue. I love that. That's how she sent her bio.
We love intrigue.
She's the author of Letters Never Sent and A Nudge. I do want to mention that I'm going to give a shout out to Sir Paul McCartney, who was listening tonight. I'm just making that up now. But
thank you, Sir Paul. Actually, he does listen to us before he goes on stage.
Wouldn't that be lovely? I do want to mention that there is an event Friday night at Inklings, which was formerly known as Prospero's Parkside and Blue Springs. Poetry Spill with Brian Daldorf, Friday, July 18th at 6 o'clock, 1101 Main Street, Blue Springs. For more information, call 816-224-9082.
And there's also a big opening at Plug Projects, which is 1613 Genesee Street, and I've forgotten the name of it. Sorry, Plug guys, but just go down to Plug Shapeshifters, thank you.
Shapeshifters.
And for more information and for the correct address, I go visit plugprojects.com. I want to thank Melanie Mitchell of Subgallery, Crystal Ann Brown and Bobby Hauser of The Hound's Den, Maria Vasquez Boyd for being so pretty, Mark Manning, and especially to you, our listeners. Stay tuned for LA Theater Works, then Chamber Music with Dr. and Mike at 9 p.m., and Vibes with Val at No. And something
from
else.
From ARC to Microchip at 11:30.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great evening.